Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
In this chapter, chapter 12 of Canto 11, the glories of holy association and the super excellence of the pure love of the residents of Vrindavan are described. The association of saintly devotees destroys the soul's attachment to material life and is capable of bringing even the Supreme Lord Krishna under one's control. Neither yoga, Sankhya philosophy, ordinary religious duties, study of scriptures, austerities, renunciation, works of Ishta and Purtam, charity, vows of fasting, worship of the deity, secret mantras, visiting of holy places, nor adherence to any major or minor regulative principles can affect the same result. In every age there are demons, monsters, birds and animals who are in the modes of passion and ignorance. And there are also human beings in the categories of businessmen, women, workers, outcasts and so on, who cannot study the Vedic scriptures. Nevertheless, by the purifying effect of the association of devotees, they may all achieve the supreme abode of the personality of Godhead, whereas without such saintly association, even those very seriously endeavoring in yoga, Sankhya study, charity, vows and practice of the renounced order of life may remain incapable of attaining the supreme personality of Godhead. The young damsels of Raja, ignorant of the true identity of Lord Krishna Chandra, considered him to be their paramour who would give them pleasure. Yet by the power of their constant association with Sri Krishna, they attain to the supreme absolute truth which even great demigods like Brahma cannot achieve. The young women of Vrindavan displayed such deep attachment to Lord Krishna that their minds, which were overflowing with the ecstasy of being with him, perceived an entire night spent in his company as just a fraction of a second. However, when Akrura took Sri Krishna along with Baladev to Mathura, the gopis then thought each night without him to be equal in duration to a millennium of the demigods. Being tormented by separation from Lord Krishna, they could not imagine anything that could give them satisfaction other than his return. This is the incomparable excellence of the gopis' pure love of God. The Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, after imparting these instructions to Uddhava, advised that for the sake of attaining the absolute truth, Uddhava should give up all consideration of religion and irreligion as promulgated in the Shrutis and Smritis, and instead take shelter of the example of the women of Vrindavan. Yeah, texts 1 and 2. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Narodhiyati. Mang yogo na sankhyam dharmam evacha na svadhyayastapastyago nishta purtam na dakshina pratani yagyas chandam si chitani niyamayamaha yatavarundhe satsanga sarva sanga paho himam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. One may perform the Ashtanga Yoga system, engage in philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice non-violence and other ordinary principles of piety, chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances and dig wells, plant trees and perform other public welfare activities, give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the demigods, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing such activities, one does not bring me under his control. Purport. The commentary of Srila Jiva Goswami on these two verses can be summarized as follows. One may serve the devotees of the Lord through ceremonial worship or by actually associating with them. Association with pure devotees is sufficient for self-realization because one can learn everything about spiritual advancement from such devotees. With perfect knowledge, one can achieve all that one desires, for the process of devotional service immediately brings the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotional service is transcendental to the modes of nature, and therefore it appears mysterious to the souls conditioned by those modes. In the previous chapter, Lord Krishna stated, Avishagno yajeta mam, One may worship me in fire by offering oblations of ghee. Also in verse 38 of the previous chapter, it was mentioned that one should construct parks, recreational places, orchards, vegetable gardens, and so on. These serve to attract people to the temples of Krishna, where they may directly engage in chanting the holy name of the Lord. Such construction projects may be understood as puritam, or public welfare activities. Although Lord Krishna mentions in these two verses that association with his pure devotees is far more powerful than processes such as yoga, philosophical speculation, sacrifices, and public welfare activities, these secondary activities also please Lord Krishna, but to a lesser extent. Specifically, they please the Lord when performed by devotees rather than by ordinary materialistic persons. Therefore, the comparative term, yatha, according to proportion, is used. In other words, such practices as sacrifice, austerity, and philosophical study may help one become fit for rendering devotional service, and when such activities are performed by devotees aspiring for spiritual advancement, they become somewhat pleasing to the Lord. One may study the example of vratani, or vow. The injunction that one should fast on Ekadashi is a permanent vow for all Vaishnavas, and one should not conclude from these verses that one may neglect the Ekadashi vow. The superiority of satsanga, or association with pure devotees, in awarding the fruit of love of Godhead does not mean that one should give up other processes or that these secondary processes are not permanent factors in bhakti yoga. There are many Vedic injunctions instructing one to execute the Agnihotra sacrifice, and the modern day followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also occasionally execute fire sacrifices. Such sacrifices recommended by the Lord himself in the previous chapter, and therefore it should not be given up by the devotees of the Lord. By performing Vedic ritualistic and purificatory processes, one is gradually elevated to the platform of devotional service, whereupon one is able to directly worship the Absolute Truth. One Vedic injunction states, the result awarded for fasting continuously for 1 month on 6 different occasions can be easily be achieved simply by accepting a handful of rice offered to Lord Vishnu. This facility is especially offered in the Kali Yuga. Nevertheless, regulated fasting on Ekadashi is not an impediment to spiritual advancement. Rather, it is a perpetual aspect of devotional service and can be considered an auxiliary principle supporting the main principle of worshipping Lord Krishna and his devotees. Because such secondary principles help one become fit for executing the primary processes of devotional service, they are also greatly beneficial. Therefore, such secondary principles are widely mentioned throughout Vedic literature. It may be concluded that such secondary principles are essential for advancement in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, one should never give up the principle of vrata, the execution of prescribed vows. In the previous chapter, Srila Sridhar Swami mentioned that the words agyayai vangunan doshan indicate that a devotee should select Vedic principles that do not conflict with his service to the Lord. Many of the elaborate Vedic ceremonies and complicated procedures for fasting, demigod worship, and yoga practice cause great disturbance to the supreme process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, hearing and chanting about the Lord. Therefore, they are rejected by the Vaishnavas. However, the processes helpful to devotional service should be accepted. The example can be given of Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was instructed by the dying Bhishma Devi. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhishma instructs King Yudhishthira in Dana Dharma, or public acts of charity, Raj Dharma, or the duties of a king, Moksha Dharma, or duties for salvation, Stri Dharma, or duties for women, and ultimately Bhagavad Dharma, or pure devotional service to the Lord. Bhishma did not limit his discussion to Bhagavad Dharma, because Lord Krishna gave Maharaj Yudhishthira the devotional service of acting as a king. And to execute his service, Yudhishthira Maharaj required extensive knowledge of civic affairs. However, one who is not rendering such prescribed devotional service in society should not unnecessarily involve himself in the material world, even by practice of Vedic rituals. Nothing should distract him from the ultimate goal of satisfying Lord Krishna. The principle of not giving up prescribed vows may be further illustrated by the example of Maharaj Ambarish. In the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that although Maharaj Ambarish performed elaborate Vedic sacrifices, his goal was always the satisfaction of the Lord. The citizens in his kingdom did not desire to go to heaven because they were always hearing about the glories of Vaikuntha. Ambarish Maharaj, along with his queen, observed the vow of Ekadashi and Dwadashi for 1 year. Since Ambarish Maharaj is considered to be a great jewel among Vaishnavas, and since his behavior was always exemplary, it is definitely concluded that such vows as fasting on Ekadashi are imperative for Vaishnavas. It is further stated in Vedic literature, if, due to negligence, a Vaishnava does not fast on Ekadashi, then his worship of Lord Vishnu is useless and he will go to hell. The members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness fast from grains and beans on Ekadashi, and this vow should always be observed by all of its members. If one falsely thinks that one may obtain the association of Lord Krishna merely by great austerities, brilliant studies in Sanskrit literature, magnanimous acts of charity, etc., one's Krishna consciousness will be distorted and weakened. One should remember the example of Lord Chaitanya, who practiced Krishna consciousness by constantly hearing and chanting about Lord Krishna. If by fasting, study, austerity or sacrifice one becomes more fit to participate in the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, then such activities are also pleasing to Lord Krishna. But the Lord clearly explains here that such activities can never become central in the practice of Bhakti Yoga. They must remain in an auxiliary relationship to the supreme process of satsanga, or association with pure devotees who hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Srila Madhvacharya has quoted from Vedic literature that if one offends the Lord's devotees and does not learn to associate with them, Lord Vishnu personally places barriers in the path of such a person so that he may not enter into the Lord's company. Srimad Bhagavatam is established by Srila Jiva Goswami as the topmost Vedic literature, and a Jivanuga, follower of Jiva Goswami, Srinath Chakravarti Thakur, has written that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's way of thinking, Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam, this is the spotless and therefore the topmost praman, because in the Vedic literatures there are many pramans, which is translated as evidence, many evidences given of many, many activities that can be performed which are supposed to be beneficial to the living being. And here some examples are given by Lord Krishna performing yoga. Generally, yoga, if the term is not qualified, that means this Ashtanga yoga. It's generally understood. Yoga means to link, and in this sense, bhakti is also, bhakti is the topmost yoga, but if it's not specifically in a context of bhakti, or not otherwise qualified, then yoga is understood to mean Ashtanga yoga. So that is recommended, and just now becoming very popular in India, there is one Swami who is teaching pranayama, which is an ancient process. You are performing that now? Looks like it. Looks like you're doing pranayama.
Breathing is going on.
Breathing, yeah. That usually goes on until we die. So he's become quite popular all of a sudden because it is quite beneficial for health and doesn't take much time, and time for the modern man is very valuable. No, not that rascal. This Swami Ramdev, his name is. He's just in the last year or so become quite prominent. You know, these Swamis, they shoot up. So I saw in the paper they gave darshan to the Gujarat state. What's that called? Lok Sabha, or what's it called? The state house, all the
Vidhan Sabha,
all the MPs, they were all doing this. And many of our devotees are doing it also because it is quite helpful for health. And even I saw one of my disciples wants to go. I suggested he go and study at Govardhan with our Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, study Sanskrit with him. So he sent me something from his website, which it says, Why become an academic scholar? Become a natural scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam. So they were giving their program, and one of the things they do daily is pranayama and asana. Because if you're sitting all day, it's good for health to do something like that. So that's all right. But going there by associating with him and studying Srimad Bhagavatam from him, then one can become spiritually advanced. It's not the pranayama. So yoga is helpful, can be helpful. But it's in and of itself, you won't get Krishna, however much one does yoga practice, nor Sankhya analysis of this material world according to the Vedic system, or according to modern science. Prabhupada sometimes equated modern science to be similar to Sankhya, because Sankhya literally means counting, and science is based on counting. Who's scientist or tech? Actually, there are very few scientists. They're mostly what we call scientists. They're technologists. They don't actually study science, but they study technology, applied science. Who's here? Any scientists here? Engineers, or like that. So it's all based on mathematics, actually, isn't it? Engineering is based on physics, which is based on mathematics. So most of modern science is based on counting. Of course, it goes much more deep than 1, 2, 3, 4. But it's analysis of this material world. But by analyzing this material world, we can never find Krishna. Simply by analyzing. Or dharma. Dharma means to follow the Varnashram system and to execute pious activities, karma kanda activities. Then swadhyay is another group, in especially popular in Gujarat. They recommend swadhyay, which is good. Of course, their conclusion, which is impersonal, is not good. But the concept that also in Bhagavad Gita Lord Krishna mentions, swadhyay, one should study Shastra. So all these things are tapas, tapasya, tyaga. Tapa and tyaga are often grouped together, mentioned together. So there are so many different things recommended in the Vedic literature. But the essence of them all is bhakti to Krishna, without which none of them can ultimately help the jiva. Now we may say that by performing pious activities, the jiva is transferred from this earthly sphere to the heavenly sphere. So that seems good, but it's not really very good. This material world is simply suffering. So instead of being beaten with an iron rod, one is beaten with a golden rod. That's all. Instead of iron chains, you have golden chains. That's all. Instead of eating plain rice and dal with poison, you have basmati rice and first class dal with ghee and poison. So, have a nice taste as we become poisoned. So there's no real benefit in this material world, or that. Being put in an electric chair instead of just a cold, hard, iron electric chair, nice, comfortable, cushioned electric chair. So this material world, what is the value of making any progress? The real progress means tasyaiva heto prayateita kovido na labhyate yad brahmatam upriyadha. To understand that within this material world there is nothing of any value from the top to the bottom. And therefore, one should go beyond this material world to Krishna. So all these other processes, they may be good if they have some connection to bhakti. But in and of themselves, they have no value to the jiva. Because the jiva, his nature is to serve Krishna. His bhakti is the intrinsic nature of the jiva. So all these other things, they're not actually related to the dharma of the jiva. Therefore they're extrinsic. But they can be dovetailed with bhakti, along the principle of anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya vajanam. Whatever is favorable for bhakti may be accepted. Whatever is not favorable for bhakti should be rejected. Just like that example of pranayama, the devotees may do it for some minutes every day. If it helps to keep the body fit and the mind alert for the real purpose of studying Srimad Bhagavatam, which gives bhakti. But pranayama itself, you can do that all day, every day, for millions of years and never get bhakti. And even if one doesn't do pranayama, then still one can get bhakti. Because it's, but it may be useful, that's all. But if you think, well, this pranayama is very good, let me do it more, I'll do it for 10 hours a day. And that becomes an obstruction to bhakti, because the bhakti, the mukhya activity, or the chief activity, shravanam kirtanam, hearing and chanting about Krishna. So other things, if we emphasize on them too much, it becomes it's not only extrinsic to bhakti, but it becomes obstacle. So one has to very clearly understand what is bhakti yoga. Otherwise, one may be worshipping Krishna, but doing so in material consciousness. And one cannot actually worship Krishna if one is in material consciousness. Material consciousness means thinking in terms of I, me and mine. Aham mameti. Acharya meva haraye. Pujasya shradhaye hate. Natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakrita smataha. If one is worshipping the Lord, even with faith, but is thinking in terms of I, me and mine, what can I get from him? What can he do for me? And not recognizing devotees or not considering about others, then that bhakti is more material than spiritual. It's not really bhakti. Therefore, actually, Hari Bhajan or bhakti begins from the Madhyam Adhika, from the level where one understands what is Krishna consciousness, what we're doing this for. And therefore, Ishvare tad adhineshu balisheshu dvisachuja prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyama. He sees the difference between the Lord, his devotees, the innocent and the envious, and accordingly love, cultivates love for Krishna and friendship with the devotees, compassion for the innocent non-devotees, and avoids the envious non-devotees. So, this point has to be understood, then one can begin bhakti. There are many people in India who do bhakti. Mostly people among the Hindus, most of them think that we are bhaktas of some sort or other. But if one's bhakti is for some demigod or bogus incarnation, then it's useless or worse than useless. Or if one thinks, I'm worshipping Krishna and also all these other gods, that's also useless. The worship of Krishna, in which one also worships so many different demigods, thinking they're all the same, that's also on the material platform. It's not actually bhakti. So, bhakti begins when we get knowledge of Krishna, which is imparted by his devotees. Even the knowledge is in the books, but unless we're guided by devotees, often what happens is people may read the book, but it's a case of pashyan api na pashyati, or shrinvan api na shrinvat, that we see but we don't see, or hear but we don't hear. We tend to have a filter in our ears by which what we like to hear comes through, and what we don't like, it doesn't enter. Or it enters and gets reinterpreted to something that we like to hear. So if we hear something we don't like to hear, I like to hear nice stories of Krishna, but all this talk of following regulated principles and surrendering to Krishna, I don't like that so much. So that doesn't enter the ear. Or we reprocess it, that, well, it's not so important, it can wait later, that's not for me, everyone's different, and Krishna understands me, so he knows that I love him, so I don't really need to follow all these things. And we have a method of reinterpreting. Or they're just saying that, but another Swami says that, so something else, so I won't follow this because it may not be. We reinterpret. Therefore, one has to, association with devotees doesn't mean that we walk up to a devotee and slap them on the back. And that's, how are you? How are you doing? But association means tadvithi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. These three items to approach humbly with submission in the mood of Arjuna. I'm confused. What should I do? I don't know. What should I? You tell me. I now am prepared to accept your discipline as a disciple. I surrender to you. So this is how to associate with devotees. Of course, there are different levels of association also. There's disciple to guru. There's friendship among devotees of equal platform in which they discuss about Krishna consciousness. There are different levels of devotees, but all devotees can come together in the Sankirtan movement and chant the glories of Krishna together, the names of Krishna. But even that chanting, we may see a neophyte devotee is chanting Hare Krishna and an advanced devotee is chanting Hare Krishna. But it's not exactly the same, because the understanding is different, the attitude is different. Neophyte devotee is chanting, and advanced devotee is chanting, but neophyte devotee is chanting with mixed desires, and a pure devotee is chanting with the pure desire only to satisfy Krishna. So here, so many different processes are mentioned, and we should understand clearly, very finely, they're in understanding Siddhanta, what is the actual conclusion of devotional service. There are so many fine points to be understood. We may have to, even to understand them, we may have to discuss with other devotees and pray for the mercy of the Lord to understand all the intricate details, or how to apply these details within our own life. Because there may be various injunctions in the Vedic literature, how exactly to apply in our life. For this purpose, we should approach Tasmad Gurum Prapadyate Jignyasu Shreya Uttamam. We should approach a guru to inquire from him about what is the highest benefit that we can get for our life. But that may not always be possible. Not the brahmachari is not always living in the gurukul. It's expected that the brahmachari after some time will leave the gurukul. He may either become a grihastha, or he may become a sannyasi and travel and preach. Or the brahmachari may stay in the gurukul and the guru may go outside. So he may not. It's not expected that one live all the time with the guru. Sometimes they say, well, in traditional times the disciple always lived with the guru, but actually that was only for a certain period. That wasn't all. Guru is supposed. Is supposed to give guidance by which one can understand how to act in this world. It's not that he's like a nanny. You know what that is, a nanny? They have a babysitter, something like that. The mother goes out to work and the nanny's Filipino usually in this part of the world, isn't it? Often. And they stay at home and they look after the children. So guru is not supposed to that the shishya should remain a child forever. He should also go out and become a guru. He should go out and preach. But then, sometimes it may be such a situation that even one is advanced in devotional service, he may be confused what to do. You see, Arjuna himself, he didn't know what to do. He was right there with Krishna. And he didn't know what to do. Should I fight or not fight? And he had the good sense to ask Krishna, who was standing in front of him. So, but it may not be that we always have direct contact with advanced devotees. Then we have to make some And we have to make some decision, and that decision will be, that will be based on, so that may be based on so many different factors. There are so many different shastric injunctions, and then we have the examples given in different Puranas of what different people have done under different circumstances. Sometimes apparently breaking the laws of dharma. Sometimes it's necessary to break the laws of dharma to fulfill dharma. That may sound contradictory, but there are many examples which are given in Shastra, and they're given in Shastra to help guide us how to act in various difficult situations. Krishna himself, after the battle of Kurukshetra, was accused that, well, you broke the laws of dharma so many ways during the battle by telling Yudhishthira to tell a lie, by telling Arjuna to kill Karna when he was down from his chariot, by telling Bhima to strike Duryodhan below the belt, which even in modern fighting is not allowed. So Krishna said that, well, if I hadn't done, then it wouldn't have been possible. All love's in, all, what's that? All's fair in love and war. So to fulfill dharma, Krishna apparently had to break the laws of dharma. Of course, Krishna, if he wanted just by his desire, the whole thing could have been, there was no need for any of this. But to execute his leela and to show the glory of his devotees, Krishna arranged for all of this. And so many points come out of this to show us how we can behave or must behave in various circumstances. Prabhupada, if he hadn't relaxed the strict rules of practicing Krishna consciousness, then he could have never gone to the West and preached in the manner that he did. But that he did so, he fulfilled the topmost law of dharma, which is Jare Dekho Tare Koho Krishna Upadesh. But to preach Krishna Upadesh in a place which is completely devoid of dharma means he had to relax some of the rules, because generally to preach or to practice Krishna consciousness, one has to follow so many principles. First, one should preach in a... Generally, the Shastra Katha, that should be spoken in a sanctified place among pure people following pure habits, among faithful people. But if one is going to preach in the West where there's never been any Krishna consciousness, then it's not possible to fulfill any of these conditions. But then if Lord Chaitanya's desire that Krishna consciousness is to spread all over the world is to be fulfilled, then one has to forego some of the minor principles to fulfill the major principle. I was just considering this morning that for economic reasons, so many Indians are spread all over the world now. I mean, they didn't go all over the world to preach Krishna consciousness, as Lord Chaitanya wanted, but have gone all over the world to get some money. Let's be frank and blunt about it. But that may be also Lord Chaitanya's plan, because Indian people, Hindus particularly, are generally more inclined towards Krishna consciousness. And somehow or other, they weren't preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world, but having gone outside India, generally those who go outside, they either, one of two things happens. They either become completely spoiled very quickly and lose their culture totally, or they become more inclined to their own culture and their own religion. It's not actually Indian's religion, but that's the way it's generally considered. So that may be Krishna's plan, that Indians are all over the world, so at least the Krishna conscious movement can be sustained in the Western world, or not only the West, everywhere, even in Japan and so many different places. Prabhupada said that Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said that Krishna arranged the hippie movement so I could preach Krishna consciousness. The hippie movement didn't seem like favorable for anything. But Prabhupada found among the hippies something which made them more inclined towards Krishna consciousness. Only he could lead them. So if you were to tell the hippies, if Prabhupada had walked in and told the hippies that first of all you have to wash your hands and take a Not just wash, if you have to take a bath early in the morning at 4 o'clock, and you say, what do you mean 4 o'clock? Just before I go to bed? There's so many, that's mentioned in Prabhupada Lilamrita, that they had their early morning kirtans at 6 o'clock. That was early for them, at the 6 or 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock. That was because the early first followers of Prabhupada, they weren't going to get up at 4 o'clock. So 7 o'clock. And many hippies would come in and join the early morning kirtan to help them re-enter the kind of external consciousness after having been on drugs all night. So it wasn't a very dharmic situation. If Prabhupada had preached all these things, then who would have followed? It wouldn't have been possible. They couldn't even, the hippies were sworn to follow no rules and regulations. But actually Krishna consciousness in the beginning stages is full of rules and regulations. But just prior to the beginning stage, there is also one consideration that yena tena prakarena manah Krishna nivesha. Somehow or other one should bring people to Krishna consciousness. And sarva vidhi nishedasya etayo eva kinkaraha. All the rules and regulations are servants of this principle, that somehow or other people should come to Krishna. So Prabhupada gradually introduced rules and regulations. The first worship, the first deity worship in ISKCON were deities of Lord Jagannath. What happened, there was an Indian shop where some little deities were there. So one devotee brought them, and then Prabhupada asked her husband to carve big ones. So it was taking a long time to carve. So Prabhupada came to his apartment to see, and there was Jagannath carved, and the form of Subhadra partly carved. On the top of Subhadra's head was the cigarettes packet that he was smoking to keep him entertained as he was carving the deities. And so eventually they were installed. And just they were there on the altar, and there were no mantras, there were no Brahmin initiates. The arati was, they would get a candle on a plate and they would take turns passing it around. And offering men, they'd go and they'd cook it and put it there, close the curtain, and they'd all chant the Maha Mantra, and that was offering, like that. And they asked, is there more? And Prabhupada said, if I told you, you'd faint. Is there more rules and regulations? Gradually Prabhupada introduced more. And eventually he said that we should follow according to Hari Bhakti Vilas, and he said we can take guidance from what goes on at Radharaman temple in Vrindavan, which is where they strictly follow Hari Bhakti Vilas, Vaishnav Smriti. But that we also haven't done today. And there are many simple things which our devotees mostly don't follow and don't know in deity worship. So that it's better if we follow all these things, actually. Main thing is bhakti, but then bhakti will be shown by how we worship the Lord. You may say, well, you know, your hands aren't clean. Well, it doesn't matter, I've got bhakti. Well, if you've got bhakti, then you should wash your hands. If you're doing it for the pleasure of the Lord, then why are you doing something with dirty hands? The rules are there. Why? The rules that are followed in deity worship and in the practical life of devotees, they're the same rules as followed in Vaikuntha. So following these rules helps to prepare us for entering the spiritual world. Following the rules and regulations of Vaishnava life means to worship the Lord in the way that He is worshipped in the spiritual world. So we can learn all these things and follow them. We are in the material world, and there are many rules and regulations given in the scriptures for living in this world. Some of them, they are the same as are followed in Vaikuntha. These are the direct world's rules of bhakti. And some are for this world. Just like in Vaikuntha, there's no regular yoga practice or any such thing. So in this world, that may be there. May be followed. Generally, Prabhupada wasn't very keen about that devotees should do yoga. even though it's good for health. You do kirtan, that's good for health also. We shouldn't do kirtan thinking it's good for health. But automatically there's exercise there. Prabhupada, he was cautious. He didn't say you mustn't do it, but on the other hand, he didn't encourage it because he knew that devotees, we have a tendency to become too enthusiastic. We start doing yoga, then your body feels great and you want to do it more. And then we start to think that unless my body is super fit, I can't do bhakti properly, and we become more bodily conscious than bhakti conscious. These are some of the dangers. We should be healthy, yes, but not that we put so much emphasis on health that our main attention becomes on health. But whatever simple things we can do to maintain health, little exercise every day, careful with the diet, not all the time, not eating very rich food all the time like this. So carefully, if a little common sense, and more or less we can remain healthy. And sometimes there's going to be some cold, fever, something like that. And as we get older, suddenly the body will start to deteriorate. And then what to do? We have to go on with our bhakti. That's the main thing. We should maximize our time for hearing and chanting about and serving Krishna. And all these other rules and regulations, as much as we follow them, that may help our execution of bhakti, or it may not. We have to see. Little yoga might help. A lot of yoga, it means obstruction. If we do 2, 3, 4 hours a day, we could be studying Srimad Bhagavat. So all these things have to be understood in the perspective of anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya bhajanam. And above and beyond that, if we get association with pure devotees, then everything becomes clear as to what we should do, how we should do it, and we get the inspiration to do that also. Even the most nectarian engagement of chanting the holy name of Krishna, we may see it as a drudgery. But if we associate with devotees who have the taste for chanting the holy name, then we also feel that taste for chanting. If we associate with devotees who are inspired for serving Krishna, then we also become inspired to serve Krishna. So this important principle is being, or is about to be elaborated by Lord Krishna in this chapter, which is called beyond renunciation and knowledge. Beyond renunciation and knowledge is pure devotional service to Krishna, far superior to being a great renunciate, far superior to being a great scholar, is simply to be a great devotee of Krishna. And a great devotee of Krishna never thinks I'm a great devotee. The example is given at the end of this chapter of the residents of Vrindavan, and especially the gopis, whose love for Krishna was spotless, not only spotless, but was and is spotless, and intense, completely intense, a full concentration on Krishna, knew nothing but Krishna. No, even the residents of Dwarka, their bhakti to Krishna goes on within the spectrum of social observances. But the gopis, they don't follow any social observances. They rejected that to serve Krishna. So this in the previous verse, the last verse of the previous chapter, Krishna says, now I'm going to teach you knowledge that is sugopya, very, very intimate, very mysterious and secret. Sugopya. What is that knowledge? That is the knowledge of the gopis. What is their love for Krishna? That will be described here. That after understanding that nothing is of any value if not connected with Krishna, then the gopis, they thought that even Vrindavan is of no value if not connected with Krishna. Of course, Vrindavan is always connected with Krishna. But they felt separation from Krishna when Krishna left Vrindavan. So that is to be described here. Uddhava, the greatest of all devotees outside Vrindavan. When he came to Vrindavan, he could understand that here, I'm not guru, I'm disciple. He was a disciple of Brihaspati, who was the guru of the devas, a great learned scholar, and considered the leader of all the devotees outside Vrindavan. When he came to Vrindavan, he was sent by Krishna to Vrindavan, superficially to carry a message, but he understood that Krishna sent me here just so I can learn what actually bhakti means. So as I was saying earlier in the lecture, that bhakti actually begins from madhyamadhika, or haribhajan begins. Up until that time, it's more or less, whatever bhakti is there, is more or less on the material platform. But then even if one is perfect in haribhajan, up to the stage of Uddhava, his perfection is not an acquired perfection, it is an eternal perfection. He is nitya siddha. He is an eternal, perfect devotee of Krishna, about whom Lord Krishna, maybe in this chapter, here in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna states, Natatame priyatama atma yonya na shankaraha nacha sankarshano na shri naiva atma chayata bhava. Lord Krishna states about Uddhava that, my dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, who is born from me, nor Lord Shiva, nor my brother Balaram, nor Lakshmi Devi, who is eternally situated on my chest, nor even my own very self are as dear to me as you. But that Uddhava, he also had to learn from the gopis of Vrindavan what is bhakti. So Haribhajan begins at Madhyamadhika, but Uddhav, who's already the topmost devotee, he felt that he had to begin, now I have to begin my bhakti, by entering Vrindavan. In a future birth, I may be born as some clump of grass so that the gopis might put their foot on me. He felt he had to learn. So where are we? Where are we and where is Uddhava? Where is Uddhava and where are the gopis? Therefore, is the very good advice that instead of trying to be a devotee of Krishna, better try to be das, anudas, 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 1,000 times removed. Because we have no ability. How shall we go to Krishna? If even Uddhava is thinking, I have to enter pre-KG in bhakti, then what is our position? Our position is that we can only pray for the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Amito kanga Krishna Krishna boli dhai tava pache pache. We can only run after the Vaishnavas begging, please give us Krishna. Otherwise, what hope do we have? Even Prabhupada, he wrote in his long essay in praise of his Gurudev Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on his Vyasa Puja Day 1936. He wrote that, I have no hope for direct service in the upcoming crores of my birth. He was finished. Then what hope do we have? Our only hope is the mercy of devotees, which Krishna is establishing here. That all these other processes there, they cannot help us. We have to get the mercy of great devotees. Then we have hope. We have great hope. Great hope in devotional service. Hare Krishna. Any question, comment about this? Question or comment?
Maharaj, you said about, and you read about public service and charity. If you take an example of tsunami, and we are in Krishna consciousness,
what should we do in this tsunami in Krishna consciousness? Controversial question. I gave a lecture, I was in Chennai just the Sunday after this tsunami, and they were collecting for tsunami relief, and they asked me to speak about it. So I gave a lecture. I don't know if it helped their collection or not, but I was making the point that this kind of actually so many people died all at once, but anyway so many people are dying. Every year, at least as many people die all over the world as died in that few hours of the tsunami. So what should we do? Well, our devotees in Chennai, there actually our temple is quite close to the sea, but there's the road. The road is between the sea beach and our temple. Our temple is about a kilometer inside. So the sea came up to the, it's on an embankment, and it came as far as the embankment. We were all phoning up Chennai temple. And so they eventually got there's some donations and went to distribute prasad, but they found that whoever was left there, they didn't want food. They already had far more than, so many people were coming bringing them food. And they were asking, can you get us new fishing boats and fishing nets? Can we do? Should we do? He said, actually they like to take our prasad because we brought it with kirtan. They like the kirtan. As far as food was concerned, they were just rejecting it. How much cooked food can they take? And so I found out that eventually they're going to renovate a school in one of those areas. But it's not the business of devotees to build schools that people can learn about Darwin's theory and forget Krishna. So it's a controversial question, because our devotee, they went to Sri Lanka and they did tsunami relief and all this, but really we should preach to people that this, there's tsunami, and yes, everyone's going to die in the whole world. It's an ongoing disaster because we're not Krishna conscious. That's the best tsunami relief. If you don't die of tsunami, you're going to die of cancer or old age or hole in the heart or whatever. Everyone's got to die again and again and again, not just once. So what should we do? We should distribute Prabhupada's books. That's the best tsunami really.
There are children who have lost parents and there's nobody to help. So should we distribute books to them?
For them it's better, we, like in Sri Lanka, they already had an orphanage. So we can expand that orphanage and teach the children about Krishna consciousness in the orphanage. But if we simply look after them so that they grow up and become a Ravana in Sri Lanka, then what is the value? Should we help them to... They're just like Vidur and Bhishma, when Duryodhan was born, they told Dhritarashtra, throw this child away. Now, that wouldn't be... If you did that, that would be against the law in any country of the world. And it sounds like adharma. They said, throw this child out. Don't allow him to grow up. He'll destroy your whole family. So... what is the use of helping people to grow up so and develop in a way that they will cause harm to themselves and others? Giving modern education to children, especially if you don't give Krishna consciousness along with it, it's simply helping them to become more sinful. Just like they found that... They did some study in different countries, and they found that wherever they introduce modern education, then the divorce rate immediately goes up, and the number of abortions immediately increases, and premarital pregnancies, all these social evils immediately increase. So the Shastric example is, what is the use of feeding a snake milk and bananas? It will simply increase its poison. So it would seem that to help people is very good, but we should know what helping means. If someone comes, if next door they are just out on the street in front of us, just like in India we find it's very common, there's big rich people, and just outside the compound there's some ramshackle hut and some very poor people are living there. So he might give some would be natural he'd give some paisa or something to them, or some leftover food or whatever. And if the children are there and somehow the parents die in an accident or something, he might do something to help them. But it's not the duty of a spiritual movement to organize welfare activities like the Ramakrishna Mission or Mother Teresa or something like that, which are centered on benefit for the body. We can perform such activities if they help people to come to Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada was actually very concerned that we not... He said we should distribute prasadam very widely, but he said don't go specifically to the poor area, because otherwise people will think that it's just something for the body. Prabhupada said that would be karma kanda. And he said don't go to the emergency spot particularly. We should distribute prasad to poor people. Everyone is poor. Everyone, even the rich man is poor because he doesn't have knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And the rich man in this life will be a poor man in his next life. So everyone needs prasadam. If we think of prasadam as simply something to feed people with, then that's not really the point. So yes, compassion should be there, but we should understand what is real compassion. This most devotees in our movement don't know that this Food for Life program wasn't started by Prabhupada. It was Prabhupada, he did organize, or he had prasad and distribution, but the Food for Life program, as it's currently called, he didn't give that name. That was started about 1982. So on the website of the Food for Life, it says the humanitarian section of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So preaching Krishna consciousness isn't humanitarian. It's the topmost humanitarian activity. It's not that... Or if we say that Food for Life is humanitarian, that means that we're thinking either the activities of the Krishna consciousness ISKCON are not spiritual, are not humanitarian, or the activities of Food for Life are not spiritual, if you say it's the humanitarian section. So actually all the activities of the Krishna consciousness movement are humanitarian. We should educate people that this is the real relief work, is preaching Krishna consciousness and giving, that relieves people from repeated birth and death. So this is highly controversial, and if we say this, then we get immediately bazookaed or atom bombed by all those who are convinced that we should promote this feeding the poor and midday meals for children in the schools, feed Sunita, the hungry child who, she loves science and we should promote her love of science by giving her food so she can study science better and learn how everything comes from matter and there's no God in control. Mm-hmm. We should set up schools in Vrindavan so the Brijbasis can have modern education and run off to Delhi and not be Brijbasis anymore. And instead of following their ancient way of life, looking after cows, they'll all become computer engineers and all this kind of thing. So people consider that this is a great service, giving education to the Brijbasis. But I'm not convinced. Not this kind of education. And modern education means all so many bogus ideas. Of course, it could be said we don't have an alternative. Prabhupada did set up the Gurukul. There are lots of problems with it, but we have to see what Prabhupada gave us, and not, if we go back to mundane education, then in course of time it's quite possible ISKCON can become completely mundane, because that's what happened, for instance, with Christianity. Whereas Jesus, he didn't come to teach, as Prabhupada used to say, he didn't teach about this eat, drink, be merry and enjoy business. But then his followers reconverted him, Christianity, back to something totally mundane. So we have to be careful not to do that. Now, it's not that prasad distribution isn't good. It is good, and we should do it. But we should also bear in mind that Prabhupada was also cautious that we not... Just like with yoga, Prabhupada, he didn't say specifically not to do it, but he didn't encourage his disciples to do it because of the danger of becoming in bodily consciousness. So... Yes, we should, we must distribute prasadam, but at the same time, if we start to present it as being simply some humanitarian work for the body, then we'll start to believe it ourselves. That's what happens. And then other people will think that about us, and they'll like us, because materialistic people like the body. But we won't be Krishna conscious. Or we'll convert Krishna conscious into a mundane religion, in which we, just like Christianity, they keep the picture of Jesus and they don't do anything he says. They don't understand his spiritual message. Yeah, please.
Regarding a guru and a disciple.
Mm.
You can correct my thinking. It may be, not quite correct.
All of our thinking is not quite correct, or it's very much not correct.
Yeah.
Unless and until our thinking is guided or completely in line with guru, sadhu, and shastra.
So if in a guru-disciple relationship, the guru should they should have a communication one-to-one. The guru knows how you behave, how you act, and he's able to guide you.
Yeah, one-to-one relationship in which the guru knows the disciple intimately and knows how to guide him, yes.
But I find that nowadays...
Nowadays we don't see that.
Guru has 5,000, 6,000...
Guru has 5,000 or 6,000 disciples, don't even know the name of all of them.
Yeah.
So what's going on in the guru-disciple relationship? Yeah, it's a good question. It's a pertinent question. Well, as I was saying in the class, it's not always that the guru is with the disciple. Generally, it's expected the brahmachari will spend some years with the guru, and then after that he comes out. But we also see in history there are many examples of, just like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they traveled widely and made many disciples, most of whom were householders, and they didn't spend much time with him. Advaita Acharya, Madhvendra Puri came to Advaita Acharya's home. He stayed there for a few days, initiated Advaita Acharya, and went on, and there's no record of him ever coming back. So what happens in such circumstances? Well, that's why Acharyas, they also write books, and they generally train up some of their closest disciples, who then percolate their teachings down, so that one, in this way, an acharya with many disciples, he may have many disciples by delegating the responsibility to train to others. As it happens, the way our Krishna conscious movement is going on at the present time, that delegation is often not very systematic and may not work or may not be in practice, but it's gradually coming into shape with there's more organized congregational preaching with these Namhattas, and now everywhere this is very good. These Bhakti Shastri courses are going on, but one should also try to associate with the guru as much as possible, physically also, that's also important, and there are, like I say, books and recordings, and one should try to catch what is the mood. Prabhupada said that I didn't associate with my Guru Maharaj more than a dozen times, but he was able to catch the essence and give it to the whole world. Whereas others who personally associated with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur day in and day out for many years, some of them missed the point altogether.
Still fighting.
Well, the fighting. It's a complex history. Mm. Nowadays, in ISKCON we used to have a habit of bashing the Gauriya Math, but I'm not into that very much, actually. Because one thing is, maybe from the inspiration of Prabhupada's preachings, many of them have also come out and they're preaching more. And the other thing is, in ISKCON, we can't say we're perfect by any means. We have enough of our own problems. So I think it's better to try and rectify our own problems rather than bash others. So, but I think we can safely say, definitely we can safely say that Prabhupada, he got the essence of what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was preaching, with some of his followers, I wouldn't say all, some of them missed the point altogether. whatever way, we're very fortunate if we can take to Krishna consciousness despite all the various problems that are apparent within Vaishnava society, which are also a display of Maya to try to discourage us. That should give us more impetus to really search out the essence, to find what is the essence of Krishna consciousness and not take it superficially. If there weren't various problems in Vaishnava society, then we could just go along turning our brains off. But if there are problems, then we have to look and see and discriminate what's the actual thing and what isn't. So in that way, it's Krishna's gift. Here we see Krishna's giving so much knowledge and philosophy. We actually have to apply that in our lives, not just go along like some blind follower. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Jai. Bhagavatam ki jai.